Hi, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
And you're listening to Maltin on Movies, coming this week live from Fantastic Fest in Austin, Texas. And who should be wandering around the neighborhood? Just happened to drop in.
We saw him at Shake Shack, and we said, would you mind coming over for a minute?
And he said, yes, and we're so glad he did. This is Jonah Hill.
I flew in for this.
You're
lying.
Wait, is that your plane outside?
No, I flew in on Delta. I wasn't at Shake Shack.
Wow.
I'm out of here, you guys.
Oh, wow.
So this is really cool, guys. Thanks so much for coming.
It's nice to be here. Deflating my whole premise. But
this is my first podcast as a filmmaker ever. So I'm very grateful.
Yeah.
And what a legendary figure and a lovely figure to get to do this with. So thanks for having me, you guys.
Well, we're thrilled to have you here, Jonah. And we're doing this recording immediately prior to the U.S. premiere of your film as writer and director, mid-90s, and which we're very much looking forward to seeing.
That's incredible.
Yeah. I realize Toronto's not in the U.S., I had to think for a moment.
I feel like it's our hat. You know, Canada's our hat.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's all the same.
Yeah, Austin was the first time I ever went to a film festival. It wasn't this film festival. This is my first time at Fantastic Fest.
Mm-hmm. This is one of the best festivals you'll ever go to.
Yeah, I'm honored to show the film here. It's exciting.
That's great.
We are huge fans of this festival and everybody here.
And you'll see, I think, that you have boosters in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
People come here who love movies, and they want to love every movie they see.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very upbeat, positive crowd, and I think you're in good hands with them.
So you're saying if they like it, it wasn't earned.
Right, that's mostly what we're saying, yes.
No,
your film is terrible, but they're going to clap.
A total layup.
I'm saying you're going in with
this
a certain
advantage. This is not going well, Daddy.
No.
Going in with a certain advantage.
I'm very proud to show it in Austin. You can tell from the moment you get off the plane here, people celebrate film here in a way that's very true and genuine, which is just so nice. It's such a nice feeling.
It is.
Well, I mean, just as when South by Southwest started, it was a music festival, and that's what it was meant to be. And then bit by bit, it grew. And one of the first additions to the agenda was a film component, film festival. And now that is a world-class festival in itself and a launch pad for a lot of movies and for a lot of young filmmakers. So it is absolutely a part of the culture here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's fun to be here.
Yeah. But you and I are weirdos because we're LA natives. I don't know if you guys know this, but having two of us in one room, it is like seeing a unicorn. Kind of like nowadays in Austin, no one's actually from Austin. We're both actually from LA with New Yorker parents. So we're Jew transplants.
Well, actually, all the kids in mid-90s are born and raised in Los Angeles.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the film takes place in Los Angeles in the mid-90s. And a lot of the people on the crew are people that were born and raised in Los Angeles. To sort of try and represent the city and time period, like, authentically at that time. So I have, like, tons of friends from Los Angeles that are born and raised there.
He just wants to fight with us, man. He's just... That's really cool. And that's what I love when we read about this film, being from there, and there is a culture to it. We just talked to Catherine Hardwick the other day, and she's talking about Dogtown and the Z-Boys and stuff like that, and I definitely got a... Watching your trailer, it felt like that, in that it felt very real and organic.
No comment.
Wow.
I love 13. Have you ever seen that film?
Amazing
film. Brilliant movie.
Yeah, that's a really good, like, Los Angeles, like, reality culture, hyper-real. Yep. It's great. I love that film.
And that was her debut as a director.
Yeah, she was a production designer before that, right?
Yep.
She's super talented.
Yeah. We talked about, she worked on Tank Girl, which is, like,
what an epic film. So. Lori Petty?
Yeah.
And Ice-T as, like, a koala or something? Or
I mean, I'm not
he
saying...
He plays some sort of... No, he plays a kangaroo. He plays a kangaroo, like a hybrid human kangaroo in it.
Because when you see him, that's the first thing you think about.
When
so
I think
you know
about,
what he'd be great at?
I think of New Jack City. I love that film.
That too.
I like that film
too. Yeah. So good.
So, you can give it up for New Jack City. That's all you can.
You can drop as many movie names as you like.
Yeah, yeah. I thought this was a movie, you know, you can talk
it is.
About
no, no, it's
yeah.
a movie crowd, and it's your crowd. I was interested to read that you have been writing pretty much your whole life. Mm. So it's this is not, you know, when people read headlines, famous comedic actor turns writer director. It's like you turned a light switch and suddenly decided to do something different.
Yeah. It occurred to you,
life.
Hey, this might be fun. Yeah. No.
But tell us about your journey. You as a young man, you started writing plays.
Well, you know, the benefit of a 15-year acting career is I kind of just went to the most amazing film school in the world for 15 years. And mm-hmm. so, like, when I started out, I was, you know, probably like 18 or 19, and then I made Superbad, and what that kind of did was plant a seed in me. I was watching Seth and Evan and Judd and Greg Mottola, these people. They, you know, Seth and Evan really wrote a screenplay that, like, represented their ethic and their voice, and it planted a seed in me that you can do that. So one day I would get to figure out what my own voice was and hopefully get to do that. And then I went on to things like Moneyball with Bennett Miller or, you know, Wolf of Wall Street. And I got all these different professors. And what I learned was the films they were all most proud of were the ones that came from a very, like, true and real place. So when it came time to start working on what would be my first film, I wanted to make something that was very, like, special to me. Mm-hmm. And from a very, like, heartfelt place. And actually, the impetus of the screenplay was I was with Bennett Miller and Spike Jonze, and we saw Whiplash. And those are two guys who have been very, like, seminal people in my film education. And I think one of them said, "Is that guy Damien younger than you?" And I said, "Yeah." And they're like, "You better get to work." And it was great. So I kind of owe Damien Chazelle also, because I went home that night and started writing because I was so insecure that I hadn't started yet, you know? And it really did light kind of a fire under me, you know, because he was so young when he made that film. And
sure.
You're like, wow, I should get to work, you know?
Well, that's the best thing about, I mean, great art often inspires artists. It gives you a motivation. And many people have told the same kind of story. But I went home that night and I started writing right away, because while the fire was still burning. Now, when you were a kid, what kind of plays did you write?
I wrote some plays when I was 18, when I went to New School briefly. Mm-hmm. But really what I started writing was when I was a kid, the most, like, seminal education I ever got in my life is The Simpsons. Mm-hmm. And I actually just got the green light from my sister-in-law to start showing my nephews The Simpsons. So I had them start I know this is a room that will understand this. I had them start at season 3, episode 1, because I think that's where The Simpsons starts officially, in my opinion. But it's been one of the great joys of my life now watching these kids sort of have the education that I had. And for me, it's such an incredible show because I'm explaining why The Simpsons is good. It's a pretty funny thing. But, you know, you watch when you're a kid, but then there's all this remarkable adult, like, writing within it. And you're getting an education in humor that you, in writing, that you're not even understanding you're getting, essentially. Mm-hmm. So my parents said, "What do you want to do when you grow up?" And I said, I want to live in Springfield. And they said, "That's not an occupation, you know?" And they said, "It's a show, and there's people who say what Homer says, and there's people that write what Homer says." And I was like, "That's what I want to do. I want to write what Homer says." So I would tape the shows, and then I would pause on the writers, and I would write them all letters, and then I would write. I have like a million Simpsons scripts from when I'm like 8 to 18, essentially. Mm-hmm. And I would send my scripts in when I was like 9 years old, 10 years old, and that was like what got me to start writing.
Well, that's fantastic.
That's really great.
What kind of response, if any, did you get?
I got like some letters back, but I don't think they like took the time to read crayon written scripts. I think these, you know.
Watch secretly, they've been using all of them.
Yeah.
Like, this whole time, it's all you.
Yeah, I wrote the monorail episode when I was 11 and Conan stole it. But, you know, I don't know. Those kinds of things last, you know, they last. They make an imprint. And then like later when I was like 10 or 11, I got super into film and became a cinephile. And to me, it was just, it's been an amazing experience to get to learn from all these filmmakers. And I don't know, the fact that I get to come here and talk to you guys as a director is pretty, you know, it's a pretty special feeling.
That's great. Did you, so you had supportive parents, I assume?
Yeah, yeah. I would say definitely supportive of me being a writer, an artist, whatever, you know, but creative person.
It's so crucial. I mean, I wouldn't be anywhere if I didn't have really supportive parents who backed anything I wanted to do. And I knew that. I took it for granted, in fact, because I just...
To be fair, I didn't leave them with much other options. I really didn't excel. Like, you know, it wasn't... but then, yeah, I'm making a joke, obviously. But of course, yeah, support from your parents is like, you know, support from anyone. You remember any support. You know, a large part of this, of mid-90s is, you know, it's about a kid making his way up through the animal kingdom. And when he's not getting support at home, it's those people you meet early on in your life outside of your house when it's you and your friends versus the world. And you're sort of, you remember for the rest of your life when someone sort of reaches a hand out and kind of shows you some love, even if it's in a very harsh teenager cold kind of way, you know, or too cool kind of way. But you just remember anytime someone has your back or sort of teaches you or encourages you. And the goal is, how do you show that in, like, not a sweaty, corny way?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Are you a music person as well? I only ask because your siblings, like, your family is very talented. You come from a really talented family.
Yeah, my sister's name is Beanie Feldstein. She's, like, the illest actress ever.
Yeah, and singer,
and
performer.
And singer, dancer, just great.
You know, in Hello, Dolly, among other things.
She was in Lady Bird, if you guys saw that. Yeah. She was amazing.
Yeah.
That shout out to Nick Cooley, who edited Lady Bird and mid-90s. Major shout out to Nick. but yeah, I actually am the, there's no credit, but I mean, I music supervised mid-90s. So like I wrote every song to, every song in there I wrote to that scene.
Oh,
and we didn't have a large music budget. So I had to write letters to like Morrissey and Herbie Hancock and Farside and Souls of Mischief and all these Nirvana's estate. So we ended up getting every single song that I wrote the film to, which is really special. And I don't use a music supervisor. And to me, it's just like music is what inspires the writing.
Yeah.
This is nothing new, but like for me, it just like is a major part of wanting to direct is getting to show the music you love through the emotional lens that you digest it as. So a large part of this for me was also, I grew up in the golden era of like hip hop, right? So to me, Tribe Called Quest is my Beatles, and hip hop is always misused in culture and films a lot of like, as either like some hood stuff or like bawling basically. And for me, it was the emotional backbone of all the experiences I had growing up. So for me, it's like how my dad would listen to Crosby, Stills, and Nash. I would listen to Mobb Deep. And like I wanted to show and frame hip-hop and contextualize it in a way that was emotionally respectful to how it was for me.
Do you love The Whackness as much as I love The Whackness?
I haven't seen The Whackness.
You must see The Whackness.
Oh, okay.
You must see The Whackness.
I'll check it out.
That's one of those movies, though, for me. Like, my dad loved it. Mm. And he is not the biggest hip-hop aficionado.
That's a cool movie.
But it's just a really, really good movie.
You don't have to be if the writing and directing is good.
No, no.
Anything can be framed in a correct way. Like, I love Barry Lyndon, and I'm not really sitting around listening to Handel, like, every day of my life, but I love the music because I love the film, you know? Yeah. It's framed correctly for me.
Yeah. That's where I discovered the Chieftains, and I became a fan of theirs out of listening to that soundtrack album. I'm dating myself. Album. Vinyl. Little hole in the middle.
No,
anyway.
The hipsters like it. It's trendy again. They know what it is. It's
all
fine.
Right, good,
it's fine.
Good. Did you play any of the music on the set for your actors?
Yeah, we would play music. We would definitely play a lot of music. I mean, it's really important for me. The two rules of the film are like no skate porn and no nostalgia porn, which is like, I haven't seen the film you were just talking about and Catherine's other film. You know, I think like the it's what goes wrong with skate movies or movies that try and use hip hop is that they use it as a move or a thing. Mm. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's just textural. and it just is a color of like these people's mm-hmm. feelings and what they're going through. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, don't make a thing out of it. That's mm-hmm. essentially like either one of those things that are like, and nostalgia, of course, it's like, even the name itself is a misdirect, like mid-90s, you think it's gonna be like that 90s movie. But the point is, it's about how fucked up and hard and funny and beautiful and sad growing up is, and it takes place in the 90s. You know, mm-hmm. it's almost like you think you're about to go see this nostalgia fest, and really it's about these kids' feelings.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is timeless.
Yeah.
And could be said anytime.
Yeah.
Well, the idea was that, like, if at the last minute we decide to take it out of the 1990s, that it should still function perfectly as a uh-huh. movie, you know?
Uh-huh.
That's a you're a smart cookie, aren't you? That's really, really cool. I like that. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You're very smart.
So when what led you into acting?
I was at New School for writing, and then I would write these little plays, and I was so bad at talking to the actors. Like, I was horrible at it. I was had very bad bedside manner. Mm-hmm. And my friend was like, look, you're not doing a good job of reading the actors. You're not giving them like delicate instructions. I didn't know how. I just didn't understand why they weren't saying it like how I wrote it or something, you mm-hmm. know, how you feel it in your head because you're as a kid. Mm-hmm. And so I took an acting class to understand like how I'd want to be spoken to so I could maybe speak to the actors better. And I got such positive feedback. And when you're like an insecure kid and you get really positive feedback, you're like, okay, this is great. And then it literally just jumped off from there. Mm-hmm. You know, I started when I was 18. I'm 34 now.
Well, that's the thing.
It's like 16 years. You don't realize like I'm old.
Oh,
sorry, guys.
Please. But did it feel like we're looking through your filmography, and what was kind of amazing is that, now, and sometimes actors don't feel this way, but to us, it's like, holy crap, like you hit the ground running and then it was doing this. And to also see how quickly, like I remember seeing you in 40-Year-Old Virgin. It's a ridiculous and hilarious scene. It's one of my favorite things. And it's how I first knew you. And then I love Accepted. I love Grandma's Boy. Like these are movies I watch regularly because they make me happy. And you move through, and then you get to something obviously super bad, but then you get to something like Cyrus, which is one of the first times that we got to see you do something else, something really different. And you know, whenever we speak to people who are comedians first and that's how people know them, we always find that comedians can really be some of the most intense dramatic actors because they tap into so many feelings and they're so aware of feelings that maybe everybody doesn't necessarily look at for themselves. But did you, I mean, moving through that, you've got Judd Apatow, who clearly loves you because he kept using you. And then you started working with all of the greatest directors. So what, like, did you ever think that that was going to be a thing? Was that something that you wanted? Did you think you would go dramatic?
I never view it like that. I just was a kid, and yeah. I got lucky enough to meet these great people making what I considered the most, like, punk, interesting movies at that time, mm-hmm. Judd and Seth and Evan, and they were, again, it just sort of planted a seed in me that you can have your own voice and mm-hmm. kind of change the tide and sort of respect what you want to say and who you are. And to me, it just, as I started to get older, it just, like, you just get better opportunities mm-hmm. and... Mm-hmm. Not better opportunities, like meaning like different opportunities.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Like, and I just felt, you know, it, I don't know, Superbad is just such a good movie
it's
to
a
me.
Great movie.
When I was like, if you had asked
it's
me when I was 23,
movie.
Like, what is the number one movie you could ever be in your entire life? Like, of course it would be Superbad. And, but for, you know, Seth and Evan are just like on another level, talented.
We're,
and Judd.
Just to be really clear, we're talking about Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg.
Yeah, yeah.
Writing partners.
And you know, and then it's like, cool, that was the best movie ever. Like, what do I do now? And yeah. then to me, it's just like, I'm not going to keep making a shitty version of the same
right.
movie. And I don't view any one is one thing, you know. I think people need to put people in boxes to feel comfortable. Like, all we all want is certainty in life. Someone said to me, like, confidence is living in uncertainty. And so I'm always searching for certainty. So if you see someone, you go, I see how you're dressed. I met you like this. This is who you are. And if you ever change that, you're shaking my certainty. And so you're making me feel like I have to reassess things, which makes me scared. And so for me, it's just all people are all things. And to me, it was always just going to be something that I was just always going to try and make what made me happy. And as I got older, I finally was able to be confident enough to just, like right now, just make the things that just feel good to my heart at that time.
Mm-hmm. Did you have to audition for Superbad?
Yeah, I did audition for Superbad, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And did they have you do any scenes with Michael Cera to see how you work together?
I didn't audition. I auditioned with just Seth and Evan were reading the part.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then like Emma Stone came in, like all the other people came in like mm-hmm. from there. Mm-hmm. Honestly, it's a long time ago. I'm having a hard time remembering.
Well, I'm sure, and you've just...
Your freshman year of college, do
honestly,
you remember the
honestly.
Third week of...
No, I hear you. I hear you, and touche.
I just wish I had a better memory, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm still so close with Michael and Emma. I see them all the time. They live in New York, too, so I mm-hmm. see them a bunch. They're just... Mm-hmm. It's been cool, everyone just kind of growing up and seeing how... You know, Michael's on Broadway right now in a Kenny Lonergan play, and... Emma's just, you know,
everywhere,
killing it always. Yeah, yeah, you know, so it's great.
And what was it like being sort of adopted by Judd Apatow?
It was great. Judd's great. I learned a tremendous amount from him. You know,
where do you think you learned your deadpan?
I don't know.
Like, are there comedians you like, or did you? Because that is part of it too. Is of course the. Again, things like Accepted or Grandma's Boy or going into Forgetting Sarah Marshall. And you and Russell, the scenes with you and Russell Brand are so damn funny. And they hold up. That's a big part of it, though. You've been in a lot of movies that hold up really beautifully.
That's awesome.
And, well, it is. I do. I watch them all the time. You're on my TV most of the days of the week. So, you know,
that's
it's
great.
Like, it's true. It is. And that's exciting, I think. You've been a part of stuff that's just, it's good enough that it doesn't matter when it is.
That's great, yeah. I mean, I just kind of tried to do the best job I could at that time,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
You always just try and do the best you can do, whatever
right.
you're working on.
Yeah.
Those films, though, rely so much, I mean, Judd's methodology is to shoot and keep shooting and keep shooting and keep shooting
7,000 hours of footage
and then toss in more ideas and throw more ideas and try to throw you a curve and see how you deal with it. That's not traditional filmmaking. Mm-hmm. It's not traditional comedy filmmaking. Mm-hmm. There's a script and you're supposed to read the lines and that's what you've presumably done in the subsequent films you've made. Do you like doing improv?
Yeah, I like doing whatever it calls for, you know. Sometimes improv is, if it's appropriate, or you kind of just go on who the director is, you know what I mean? Like Judd and Seth, those guys, and Evan, they like to improv a lot. Martin Scorsese likes to improv a lot. Quentin Tarantino and the Coen brothers do not like it when you improv a lot. Everybody's different, you know. I made mid-90s hoping these kids were going to improvise all the time. I kind of, Chris Blauvelt, my DP, and I sort of set up the shots so they could. And then they didn't end up feeling comfortable because they were non-actors. They really wanted to get good at the lines.
Right.
So I think every situation is just different, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like no two things are the same. No two filmmakers are the same. It just all depends on, like, what is appropriate for the thing you're making.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I like it a lot. I like it when if it's it, – sometimes, obviously, if the script needs it,
yeah,
then, like – Yes, it's a lot more fun, but you way rather have a script that's so well written that you don't want to improvise.
Yeah,
that would be
yeah.
my preference always.
Yeah.
You know?
Sausage Party. Sausage Party is joy. And I love the, just thinking about talking about the music, you know, that you love the, that was one of the coolest experiences was getting to see Seth on the Oscar road. Because the music was getting so much attention. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell him how much I loved it. And oh my God, look who you worked with to do this stuff. And the animation is really well done.
Yeah, that movie's hilarious.
Like, it's great. And but you're a really good voice actor.
Thanks.
You're terrible at everything. No. Do you like that? I mean, I get that your mode in general is I will do it, I will try it, whatever you want, give it to me, here we go. But
yeah, that was
voice
super
acting
fun.
Is a whole other world. It's exhausting.
I like it a lot. Honestly, it's you just want to try different things, you know? It's like super fun to do all kinds of different things.
Yeah.
Because I would think it's difficult to do the animation work, at least in the traditional way that Disney and everybody else does, where you're not playing opposite any of the actors in the scene. You're alone in a recording booth, and the director is reading you, or feeding you the lines. And so
sometimes they'll have like readers also.
Yeah.
Yeah, like sometimes they'll have like actors that they hire. Sometimes the other actors will be there, and sometimes there are actors that they hire.
Mm-hmm.
I think for Sausage Party, I think Seth and Evan were there.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be cool because they could read some stuff with
of
you.
Of course.
Or sometimes they'll have an actor, or sometimes you're just literally reading off of like a sheet of paper.
Yeah.
But it's fun to use your imagination also.
Sure.
Well, How to Train Your Dragon, which also holds up and people love it, and that's got the TV. Do you do the voice for the TV show as well?
No.
No. That's you're too busy making movies.
No, I don't even know if they asked me to be honest. But I like those movies. It's cool because I have two nephews, like I said, and they can't, especially like when they were younger, they couldn't really see any of the things that I had made. So it was really cool to show them, like take them to those movies. I was in like the Lego movie also, and that was like really fun because like...
Channing Tatum.
Yeah, and they could like bring their friends to... see something and be like, that's my uncle, whatever, you know?
No, that's great. How old are your nephews?
Now they're 9 and 11.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah. But they were younger in previous years of their lives.
Yes. I get that.
Yeah.
But I get also how proud it has to make you to be able to show them something of yours and just have them enjoy it.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, like, it's funny, like, as an actor, you're just a color in, like, other people's paintings, right? Mm-hmm. So you contribute as much as you can, but ultimately it's, like, a filmmaker's medium. So there are certain performances I'm really proud of that I think are, like, or I've been lucky enough to work with a lot of great filmmakers, so I've been in movies that I think are good. So, like, which is a huge gift, right? But it's not like I really have that much ownership over them.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope to one day have makes a bunch of films that I can show like my family and stuff.
Yeah.
This being the first one, but they're too young to see mid-90s. But it's an authorship in a way that I've never experienced before, which is really exciting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Your Scorsese stories are remarkable. They are the teeth. That's the one that sticks with me is getting punched for real and having the fake teeth in and the whole... For anyone who doesn't know what I'm talking about, it's a great story. It's great. No, things like that, that's being able to say, well, one time Marty said, you go, because that's real life.
Yeah, I mean, again, like, these... Like, if someone ever asked me, like, advice or something of how to get into show business or something, I always say be a PA.
Yeah.
Because you can get a front row seat to watch great filmmakers work, and that's, like... As an actor, it's the same kind of thing. You're just like getting a front row seat. So for 7 months, I just watched Martin Scorsese direct, and that's like literally the best film school you could ever ask for. So I'm definitely a lucky person that I've had all these kinds of people to be around. And yeah, he's the best. I mean, there's no one that compares to him. I think the thing that is most impressive about him is like a lot of directing is problem solving, and a lot of times, you know, a really good director can solve a really difficult problem in like 30 minutes or something. He could literally solve a really difficult problem in like 3 seconds, you know? And it's unbelievable to watch. It's some sort of mix of experience and then just genius that it's so amazing you don't even aspire to it. It's just a marvel to watch, kind of.
Yeah. Now, what I don't know if you can answer this specifically or not, but you not only took on writing and directing your own movie, but you decided to work with kids who had not acted before.
Yeah. Never work with kids and animals.
Yeah.
Always work with kids. I don't know about animals, but I loved it. Sonny, the main kid, had acted before in Killing of a Sacred Deer, which is a great movie, great director. But I still found him at a skate park. I didn't know he was an actor. That film hadn't come out yet. And then, yeah, the rest of the kids are non-actors, and then Lucas Hedges and Catherine Waterston are obviously actors.
Right.
But I loved making a movie with non-actors, and they're also skateboarders, so they're people that aren't typically empowered by authority figures, let's say, right? And so a really amazing part of it was, at the beginning they were terrified, but by the end they were so, they had such strong work ethic and desire to become great actors. And it, you know, this kid Olin, who's in the movie, is amazing. He's this really boisterous person. And at lunch, all the kids would, everyone would make fun of each other. And it was kind of funny because I remembered Superbad, where like I was the young kid and then like everyone was watching. And then like I was now the old guy. I was like, they were the kids and I was not the kid anymore. Mm-hmm. And Olin looked very pensive, and you're kind of like a parent in these situations. And I was kind of like, oh no, something wrong, you know? And I looked under the table and he had his script like under the table and he was practicing, you know? And it was moving. Like, it was really moving to see these kids like really take this seriously, mm-hmm. and fall in love with film and want to be actors and filmmakers. And they're asking, you know, Blauvelt and our DP, like, you know, like they're learning all the terminology and they're, you know, it's the coolest thing I've ever been a part of in that way, where you feel like you got someone into something that hopefully they'll keep with them the rest of their lives, mm-hmm. you know? And that kind of shit is like why you do stuff like this. It's really mm-hmm. special, you know?
What, that's a reward you get for doing this.
Yeah, and they're amazing, like, you know, and they're amazing. They're so, in Toronto, I didn't see Moneyball till the Toronto Film Festival where it premiered, and it was really a moving night of my life, and my family was there and stuff, and I decided to not show the kids the mid-90s until the premiere at the Toronto Film Festival, and to give them that kind of experience that I had. And, you know, afterwards, they were all, like, hysterically crying. It was so insane. It was just, like, crazy, and I think it blew their minds to see that their hard work, like, paid off like that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it's just an amazing experience, like going through this for the first time for me and the first time for them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Did was it hard to have them do like a second take or a third take to recreate that magic you're looking for?
No, every actor is different. Whether they're a non-actor or, you know, like Lucas Hedges is a Oscar-nominated actor, and he, you know, it doesn't matter that this kid has never acted. These kids, mm-hmm. you know, it's like every person is different, and mm-hmm. some kids could do it better to the 50th take. Some kids are done after two. You know, for me as an actor, when we're making Moneyball, Scott Robertson, who's my first AD and also did Moneyball with Bennett, he would always talk about how, like, me as an actor and Brad Pitt are opposites. Like, Brad gets really good, like 20 takes in, and after two takes, I'm like done. So like but that's just how it is. You know, like Lucas Hedges gets better and better. You know, like Leo's first two takes are like the best, you know, everybody's different, you know? And so you kind of watch these things and you can't really apply one methodology to any two people, you know?
Yeah.
It's like if you have two kids, you can't be like, I'm just going to treat them both the exact same way. Everybody's just their own person, an artist, you know?
That's why I only had one. You could only handle
one. Are you the only child?
I'm it.
Wow.
I'm
you were enough.
All they got. Yep. Yep.
Did you ask advice of anybody? Obviously, you've been sponged like a sponge, soaking up, as you say, the experiences you've had with all these great people you've worked with. But did you ask anybody for advice about not just making a film, but getting through the shoot?
I asked everybody that would answer me. I mean, like, I asked a lot of people. I was lucky enough to... I thought I went to go the weekend before I started prep. I went to Martin Scorsese's house, and we have the same manager, and he's someone who's been awesome to me, obviously. And I thought I was going for like 20 minutes, and I went to his house, and we ended up talking for 4 hours about the film, just because he's so generous and he loves movies so much. So once I got him started, I was like, yes, he's on a roll. Like, I'm just going to keep
the two of them together.
I can't even imagine.
Terrifying and amazing at the same time.
I could be a fly on a wall for that, like any day to watch you two talk about films. So he was obviously incredibly helpful. Spike Jonze is someone who's incredibly helpful. Bennett Miller, and then I'd worked with the Coen brothers the year before, and I saw Ethan Coen the night before I started shooting. I ran into him at a restaurant, and I was just walking by, and we said hello because we knew each other, and I was like, all right, I'm starting my first movie tomorrow. Like, do you have any advice for me? And he said, let me think about it. I'll find you before I leave. And he came to my table and he goes, all right, so when I made my first movie, I was so stressed, I didn't enjoy one second of it. Mm. He's like, I want you to promise me you're gonna enjoy this experience. And even the stress is new, so enjoy even the newness of that. Mm-hmm. And I tried, wow. And I told my crew, I'd be like, please make me enjoy it. Like, please. It's not in my DNA. It's not like I'm not someone who was. And I actually said it at the Toronto Film Festival when I was up there with the kids. I was like, wow, now I'm enjoying this, you know? And to come show the movie here in Austin and get invited to this wonderful film festival and be up here with you guys, it's, I guess now that the reviews came in, I can fucking take a deep breath. Right? But before then, I'll be honest, it was pretty hard to enjoy any of it.
Sure.
But I'm actually just enjoying it, and especially through the kids. Once we all got here today, I ran into them on the street, and we got Tex-Mex, and they're just hyped to be here. You know, they're hyped they got free tacos today. And so you're in your own head thinking all of these, you know, things as an adult, or, you know, what are people going to like it, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, I made the movie I wanted to make.
Yeah.
How lucky am I? You know, I got to make a movie.
Yeah.
You know, from my heart. That's insane.
Well, that's
now, how did you go about doing that? Did you write the script first?
No, I wrote the script after I made the movie, Leonard. Yeah. I just finished it 2 days ago.
And to which I say, bravo. It's great.
See, I'm the first person in history ever to do this.
Christopher Nolan made a film that ran backwards. You wrote the script after making the movie. I think that's sensational.
Sorry, you alley-ooped me for that. I didn't really know what to do.
No.
No, I mean, did you write it on spec, as they say? I mean, it was...
Yeah. I mean, this is not... a movie with... No, you know, with a bunch of black and Hispanic kids in East LA in 1995 skating around talking about their feelings is not exactly like X-Men. People are dying to make it,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But to me, it was important that this movie was real, was really real, and really reflected what this time period was like. Mm-hmm. This time period was like to grow up in Los Angeles skateboarding, and mm-hmm. even though it's not my life, it's something that emotionally is from my heart, and I wanted to cast non-actors. You know, they tried to bring in kids from Stranger Things and stuff, and you're you know, no disrespect to that, but that's not this film.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It doesn't work. And so this was something I spent 3 years writing from my heart, and luckily, you know, Scott Rudin, Eli Bush, and then A24, Ken Cow, these are people that got behind the film, and they protected me, and I fought ferociously, and even shooting 4:3 aspect ratio or Super 16, you know, these are not things that are typically easy to get done nowadays. I'll let you know if anyone wants to be a filmmaker here. You know, these kind of things are fights, and casting kids off the street is fights. But people like Scott and Eli and A24 and Ken, they believed in this film. And to me, that comes from the screenplay. So I spent 3 years on it. To me, writing is the most amazing thing because there's literally nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're directing another person's screenplay, you're starting with the screenplay.
Right.
There was nothing, and this was this thing I would go to in my room when I was sad or lonely and just work on. And then now 4 years later, we're all here talking about it. That's, to me, very special because I didn't think anyone would want to make it, you know? I didn't know if people would ever show up and see it or people mm-hmm. would show up and work on it, yeah. You know? So, I don't know, that kind of thing is insane. It's just...
Did you show it to people along the way?
Yeah.
The screenplay? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, of course, yeah. Mm-hmm. Movies are made by community. Mm-hmm. All those filmmakers you mentioned have their own communities of people that mm-hmm. they share things with. I don't think anyone's an island of... as you know. I mean, but yeah, of course, it takes a village, like definitely. And Scott Rudin and Eli Bush, like, you know, Scott Rudin is one of the most famous producers ever, and his notes are so brilliant that, like, I can't even believe it, you know?
See, that's
I did 20 drafts.
Did you?
Over 3 years, yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
That's. Do you know Sean Baker? Are you a fan of Sean Baker and his work?
Oh, yeah, The Florida Project?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that
just
film.
Just because what you're saying and Sean's other films.
The Tangerine?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that movie.
You're quite similar. First of all, he likes to work with people, and that's the first time we actually heard someone say non-actors. My dad, phrase you used.
He has a wonderful substitute for that phrase. He calls them first-timers.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And yeah. It got into our heads because we thought, and then everything else he said made sense because you went, okay, you view everything as good. So,
I wouldn't agree with that term, though.
Oh, no,
only because they might not ever want to be actors again, and they might have never ever thought of being actors, right?
That's true.
So these kids all want to be actors, right? Mm-hmm. So he's right in that sense, first-timers. But if they didn't, and they never thought of it before, they are just straight-up non-actors.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, but it's amazing. Like, did all the kids in... Florida Project, are they all actors now? Are all those people actors?
Well, I mean, Brooklyn Prince, I think, is the only one who's straight off. Like,
whoever
that
played,
kid
who's played the
be?
Mom in that film?
So he found her through Instagram.
She's amazing.
And I
she
can't,
was so good.
I can't think, it's Alicia or something like that. I can't think of what it is.
Khaleesi.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Khaleesi Game of Thrones girl on Instagram. That's exactly what it is. But it's that kind of a mentality. That's to say, it reminds me in the best way. And one of the things is that because we got to see him again on the campaign trail and him with the kids going everywhere, no matter what was going on, and Chris Burgosh was the same thing, that no matter how crazy things got, they were with the kids. So, my dad goes to the Oscar luncheon and I'm outside with all the publicists. And they come out and they're doing photo shoots with the kids. So whatever's happening, you're seeing things the way they're seeing it.
Yeah.
And in the same way in previous, Quamajne Wallace, there's been, you know, luckily for us, for film goers, we get hopefully once a year at least one kid that just inspires the hell out of you and excites you.
Yeah, there's a kid in this film named Nikhil Smith who... plays Ray, and like none of you guys have seen the movie yet, but he just is—he gives such a moving performance, and he's never acted in his life. He is a professional skateboarder, but had never acted. And like, believe me when I tell you, you will be mesmerized by this kid's performance. You know, it's like, because you can't. I don't know many actors, and I've worked with a lot of them, that can give the kind of feeling that this kid gives, you know? And that just comes from understanding life in a way, the whatever way he's lived it, you know?
Now, having made your first movie...
And now he's a great actor, by the way. And now he is going to be like a very serious actor, you know?
That's really exciting. That's an exciting thing to
coolest,
be a part of.
The coolest, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think it's going to be odd to put yourself back in the role of actor where you're making a valuable contribution to the movie, but as you say, you don't own it?
Or is it just easier?
No, I don't know what I'm going to do. Right now, all I care about is getting people to see mid-90s, you know? So I have no idea what's next. And to me, it's just...
Which we should say opens in October...
October 19th, LA
and
New York.
Wider on October 25th.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
26?
26.
This is why you look for publicists.
Where's A24
when
at?
Open? Hi. 26.
Word,
26. Thank you. A24, by the way, one of the best companies out there. They support incredible films.
They support filmmakers.
They are. Anytime we see that logo, anytime we get emails every day, anytime we see it, we're excited because
they care.
It's an
incredible place to be a filmmaker. They're special people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's like a stamp of approval. Almost,
yeah.
You know, having them distribute your film. And
I just think it's like most time. I have the opposite of most people's career. Like I started in the studio system, and then I'm working my way away from it.
Yeah.
And it's. I'm like Mickey Rooney. It's like 17. But a lot of times you're working on this stuff and imagining how much I worked on this film, how much I care about it. You know, a lot of times in the studios, you don't even know the people responsible for making the materials and putting out the film. And you know everybody that works at this company. Like, I know them personally, and like, they're friends, and they're, you're in it together. And that's, you can't put a price tag on that.
No, no, of course not. Of course not. And how did you hire your crew? I mean, again, you're a first. You are a first timer.
He really enjoys the rundown.
I love it. Yeah. No. I mean, well, again, I kind of over my acting career would always remember the people that I loved the most in the crew, and like, I just was looking. You know, one of the reasons it's great to be, you know, why directing is so special is because you curate who you're around. Mm-hmm. You know, as an actor, you're dropped in and you don't choose anyone. So there's people who might have totally different taste or aesthetics or vibes or even personalities than you would ever choose to be around. So Scott Robertson was the first person I called, and he was the first AD on Superbad and Moneyball. So I loved him. He was like a big brother. So like, I knew when I was going to direct a movie, he would be my first AD. Mm-hmm. And then Christopher Blauvelt, my DP, I was a fan of his through Kelly Reichardt's films. Mm-hmm. And I was at dinner with Spike Jonze one night. Spike usually comes into play in a lot of this stuff. He's like everybody's fairy godfather. And Blauvelt scared Spike, because Spike Blauvelt worked for Harris Aviz for 20 years. Mm-hmm. So he came up under Harris, who's my favorite DP.
Wow.
May he rest in peace. And then Blauvelt scared Spike and I took a picture. And then once Spike saw who it was, he was laughing. And then he goes, I was 10 pages into the screenplay at this time. And Spike goes, bet you $1,000 Blauvelt shoots your movie. And he was right.
Wow.
Obviously. So I hired Blauvelt like the next week, even though I was 3 years away from shooting. And then Heidi Bivens, our costume designer, did a brilliant job in the film, was the third person I hired. And then Jameen Asa, I worked with on Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot. He was Gus's production designer on that film.
Great film, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Gus is the man, great obviously. Film. Another great professor, Gus.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And
if you haven't seen that movie, Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot. He's
Gus Van Sant, Joaquin Phoenix.
It's great. A recent one. You can find it.
And Jameen grew up skating in LA, in East LA in the mid-90s, as did Blauvelt. So, and Heidi was friends with all those people. So I tried to connect a lot of people who were the artists I admired most, who also understood the culture, essentially. And then Nick Hui was editing Lady Bird as we were starting. So that was also Scott Rudin in A24. So mm-hmm. Nick jumped right onto our film.
That's to have that support, to have a team you trust implicitly, and you know that they've got you, whatever you do. And you're very smart to have that.
They're amazing. And they're like family, you know. Yeah. There's nothing like creating with people you love. Like, you're making stuff in a bunker with people you love and respect.
Yeah.
And I just hope to get the chance to do it again.
They're going
to
pull you off the stage in 5 seconds.
Oh, word?
Yeah, so we have to
As they say
word
in vaudeville, we're getting the hook.
Oh.
And
I think we have to show the movie soon. I think I have to tech check the actual film.
And we're going
is that
to
why?
It. Okay. We cannot wait to see it.
I was like,
it.
Am I that boring that you guys want me to?
That's exactly it.
I tried to drink a coffee and get revved up for everybody.
All that's left is for us to say thank you for being here.
Thank you
it's
so
an honor.
Much.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
And thank you all for sitting here.
Hold off a minute.
He is on all the socials.
And also,
he's on all the social places. You can follow him on Instagram and Twitter.
Who, me?
Yep, you.
Oh, I don't give a shit about that. See mid-90s. You just go see mid-90s.
No. I say it because that way you can, if you want to check dates for the film or anything like that, that's a thing. There's a purpose.
Okay.
There's a purpose.
I really need to boost my influencer status so I can get a Revlon deal.
Look, we're many days away from, you know, the times of Ask Me About My Wiener, though I will love it until the day I die.
Can I just say
welcome, Keith.
I'm super psyched to be in front of a crowd that really cares about film and shows up to stuff like this. It's awesome.
We're thrilled.
Cool. Thank you both.
Our final word is congratulations.
That's right.
Thanks.